Who's going to know your schedule better than the press secretary? Who's going to know your schedule better than the press secretary?
Your wife.
Okay. Well, your wife. Yeah.
The butler that brings you the coffee.
Unless if you're a guy named Bill, maybe it's a girl named Monica. But for the most part, it's your
damn,
press secretary.
Pat, you
right?
had to go there.
But I want you to see this clip.
Good morning. How are you
the
doing,
The way
sweetie?
She says it, she's so proud when she says this.
Is this Jen Psaki right
you
here?
You got to see this. Can you play this okay. clip?
And that's what people need to hear from him. Now, it's important to note, President Biden does nothing at 9 a.m. He is a night owl. So the fact that he is doing this at 9 a.m. anyway speaks to how vital the White House recognizes it is for him to have his voice out there conveying that to the American public.
All right, Steve Rettner, thank you.
He's so committed. You know, our president is so committed because he took a 9 a.m. meeting, Tom. He took a 9 a.m. meeting. American people should be thankful for the press. There's only one position.
You set us up with that one, Pat.
9 a.m. And by the way, the way she's... Can you play that? She's so proud when she said, I think we need to listen to this one more time. Watch this. Just one more time. Look how proud she is.
Now, it's important to note, President Biden does nothing at 9 a.m. He is a night owl.
Does nothing at
9 a.m. He's doing this at 9 a.m. anyway.
By the way, if you're Trump or DeSantis, that's how the ad has got to start. Oh, go to exactly President Biden does nothing at 9 a.m.
You know what I would have? Press play. A list of things that happened at 9 a.m. that were bad.
Press play.
We'll need to hear from him. Now, it's important to note, President Biden
does nothing. Start from right there. Go to exactly where you think he says it, and try to find the time.
It's important to know.
I think it's a little bit further back. Let's go back right there. Let's try this.
He does nothing at 9 a.m. He is a night owl. So the fact that he is doing this at 9 a.m. anyway speaks to
By the way,
I don't know any old man that sleeps until 9 a.m., though. Most people, old people are up at the crack of dawn anyway. That's actually
weird. Because your body's kind of programmed.
And I would like to know,
sleep, man. Arianna Huffington, I'm telling you. I don't care. I don't know how you brought her up. If she was my wife...
She wrote a great book on sleep.
No. If she was my wife, I guarantee I get an extra 5 minutes of sleep a night. I'm telling you. And Biden, 9 a.m.? Come on.
That was supposed to be a joke. That was a joke.
Okay,
for Tom.
There you go. You're hitting on Arianna Huffington right there? What just happened?
No.
My question is, he's a night owl. What time's he going to bed? I don't see Biden up till 4 a.m. just getting it in. I think he's
Or it's maybe they couldn't find him till 9 a.m. because he wandered off.
Do you really put Biden as somebody that goes to sleep at 2 a.m.?
No. That's what I'm saying. I don't know what's going on. I will say this.
If you're the enemy, if you're China,
well, she didn't
if you're
say
Iran,
which night.
If you're Russia, by the way, if you see that, what are you thinking if your enemy, his press secretary says, if the president doesn't, this is an important meeting because president doesn't do anything at 9 a.m.
Not a good look for Joe Biden. By the way, not to get all,
somewhere
sad
somewhere
here.
Vlad is like, we will move the submarines at 8 a.m. No problem.
This is an article from The Independent from 2021 that says that the president begins his short walk home at 7 p.m. Unlike Mr. Obama and Mr. Trump, who sat up late into the night reading briefing documents and watching right-wing cable news respectively, Mr. Biden goes to bed relatively early.
Dude, this is
he's not a night owl.
Rob, you just rocked her. With what you just said.
Well, and it also says up here that in the mornings, his day starts at 9 a.m. when he has coffee with his wife before he sits down and takes calls and has meetings.
So he sleeps for 13 hours.
That's insane. No way.
I mean, dude, he's got to write a book. Sleep 50% of your day.
What? Sleep when you're dead.
That is...
You know what's weird? Do you remember what time the first plane hit the World Trade Center, 9/11?
6:30.
Was that
6:30? 6:30 Pacific Standard Time, 9:30 Eastern.
I thought it was 8 something. No. Anyway,
I was at the office. Okay. I was.
Anyway, things happen very early in the morning. Okay.
The first plane hit the tower at 8:46 a.m.
Okay.
And then the second tower
8:46 Eastern
9:03. Yeah.
Okay. So point is, it was right before 9 a.m. and then right at 9 a.m. And that's where I was going with this.
Well, that's too much because it's 14 minutes too early. So he's got to tell the next time somebody wants to attack, listen, moving forward, you can't attack us 3-9 a.m.
That's fucked up.
Because that's a guideline. That's the president's guideline. And he dictates the terms of war. Okay? We cannot go to war from 9 p.m. to 9 a.m. off limits. Right? By the way, this is a joke. But this is the funny part. It's not a joke. This is...
So are you saying that he's literally sleeping on the job?
Now, here's what I want to know. Do you think when she made that comment, her phone blew up afterwards saying, you're the freaking press secretary?
Former.
What the hell are you saying? Why would you say something like that? That is going to be the perfect ad for anyone to use against Biden for 2024. Yeah. No. She just gave one of the best ads out there.
She got a bunch of texts. Thanks for the help.
Yeah.
Well, what this is sort of counterintuitive because all we hear is that it's Sleepy Joe. So it's maybe
it's validation.
Maybe there's some validation that's going on here.
And he comes
maybe
back
is
and he says,
actually Sleepy Joe.
But by the way, right. I'm telling you, if there's any stuff that somebody could say that could finish your campaign, statements like this, that this could cause you to not have a chance at. Nobody can have a reputation like this in a marketplace. No one. Nobody can have a reputation like this in a marketplace. There's nothing about this that benefits and strengthens your country going up against the real bullies in the world.
By the way, let's say it's Trump, Biden. You know, I'm already anticipating, because they all have canned lines. I'm already anticipating Trump being like, you know, you're sleeping on the job type of thing.
Now, you know what he's going to say? He's going to say, you know how he said to Bloomberg, he said, when he said, you know, I don't know why. Apparently, Bloomberg's been asking about a stool to make him look taller. If he gets it, I need it too. I don't know why he's asking for it, but I'm hearing. He's going to say something like, look, I'm hearing Biden's talking about the fact that 6 p.m. debate is a little too late because he's got to go to sleep. That's what I'm hearing in the marketplace, because he got to go to sleep and he doesn't do anything before 9 a.m. So, I mean, this just gives an opening for easy shots to be taken.
But then again, Biden can be like, listen, Trump, I could beat you in my sleep, buddy. So don't worry about that. So he might have a canned line too.
That's a pretty bad one, though. That is a pretty bad one. Let's talk about South Korean government proposes increase in work week to 69 hours from 52. I'm sure a lot of Americans are wanting America to potentially take this idea.
Yeah.
Here we go. This is Business Live. South Korean government plans to increase the maximum working hours to 69 and allow for banking overtime in exchange for time off, replacing the 52-hour work week law introduced in 2018. The new proposal aims to provide more flexibility in the labor market, promoting family growth and improvement of fertility rate, projected to hit a global low of 0.7 in 2024. Employers and workers would agree on whether to count overtime by the week, month, quarter, half year, full year, up to 29 hours a week of overtime allowed for periods of month or longer. Over 29 hours of overtime can be exchanged later for time off of unspecified rate. While the government argues that allowing workers to spend accrued overtime on vacations will enable people who want to work less, such as parents or caregivers, to do more, to do so, some experts are skeptical about the proposal's ability to reduce working hours. Tom, what do you think about this article?
If they're trying to get people to work longer and solve the fertility rate, I think they're trying to burn that candle at both ends. I don't think that works. I think somewhere, someplace in government, the maximum work week is 69 hours. So that would be, if you looked at an American 40-hour week, that's 29 hours of overtime. So maybe that's working 8 on Saturday, extra 5 hours every day. That's a lot of overtime. So I don't know. Proposed more flexibility in the labor market. It sounds like it's less flexibility because you're working more, and improve the fertility rate because you're never home. I don't know how that works.
Yeah, I agree with Tom on this. I'm doing the math on this. By the way, 69. But this seems like a number Elon Musk would make his employers work. Like, yeah, I want you clocking in at 4:20, and you work 69 hours a week. Wink, wink. It seems very Elon Musk-ish, but 69 hours divided by 5 days, if that's how often you choose to work, that's 14 hours a day, okay? And we all know that you only get 4 hours of sleep these days, so that's the number right there. So you only have a certain amount of time to do your thing. 69 divided by 6 days is 11 and a half hours. If you do the 52 hours a week divided by five, that's 10 hours a day. I think this is an ongoing conversation that we continue to have. You know, the work-life balance, the four-day work week, which you just did a great episode on that, on Valuetainment. And then, you know, the bigger question, do you live to work or work to live? And have you seen the trending topic on TikTok these days about this? It's like Moody Mondays or something like that. I'll find the story, but it's basically like how young people don't necessarily have to work on Mondays. Have you seen that?
No.
I'll find you this thing.
But pull up the fertility rate I sent you right now, countries. Take a look at this, Tom. Lowest in the world is Taiwan, then South Korea, Singapore, Macau, Hong Kong. I mean, top five, all in Asia, right?
Oh, bare minimum Monday is what it's called, by the way. Bare minimum Monday.
Which is what?
That's the trending thing on TikTok right now.
Let me show this.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
We'll go to that Puerto Rico. I mean, how is Puerto Rico so low? The people in Puerto Rico are beautiful. Like, that should be like 4.8, right? British Virgin Islands, Bosnia, Romania, Japan, Greece. Greece, they don't even work. You have all the time to make babies. Poland, Portugal, yeah. Croatia.
Bosnia, one of the most beautiful cities on earth there.
What were the stats that we did the other day about?
Talking about? You said, where's the most beautiful women in the world? And you said, wasn't it a city you went to?
Oh, Dubrovnik, Croatia.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no way Croatia's on that list, 1.44. Well, listen, you know, when I wasn't married and I was single, my favorite place to go read books was Croatia. Incredible libraries. Okay, so Andorra, Slovakia,
I'm gonna go
Serbia,
check out some of the libraries,
Italy,
in Croatia.
Hungary. These are some low numbers. You know, by the way, put the highest fertility rate, flip it. Let's see what the highest fertility rate is.
These are for the lowest fertility
rate. Lowest.
Not having kids.
Not having kids.
All right.
Not having kids.
Is it in Mexico?
Highest fertility rate by countries, what? Wow, 6.9. Well, that makes sense. Go.
A lot of it is in Africa.
Zoom in. Yeah, Somalia, 6.0.
All Africa.
Yeah, it's all Africa.
Well, when you have no economy, you have time on your hands.
Look at this. South Korea, the lowest fertility rates. There it is. That's why they're implementing this.
So can you go back to see if the list goes even higher? Like
what they need is
outside
a lockdown
of Africa. But they had a lockdown, Tom. No, not this one. That only shows top 10. That's where you were at. Go to another one to see if we can go even lower. Yeah. Like, I want to see more than just 10. No, this one's only going to give you a few. Mm-hmm. What's the highest? Zoom in. See if we see anything. Somali, Burma. Keep going lower. Keep going lower. Keep going lower. You know, Afghanistan, 4.72. Sudan, Zambia, Cameroon. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty wild to be at 0.9. 0.9. So, I don't understand the correlation with the amount of hours you work. Do you know why? I mean, dude, I don't know how many people like work, you know, like I work. I got four kids. Like, you mean to tell me you don't have time to make babies?
Well, the more you work, the less time for leisure. So
that doesn't make any sense. You know why that doesn't make any sense? Okay, Greece is known as the lowest working hours, one of the lowest working hours in the country. They don't work that many hours. They're not even making kids. Mm-hmm. So the correlation to me doesn't make any sense.
Well, go back to that thing about South Korea. They're the lowest in fertility, yet they want to increase the working, right? Okay, they want to increase the amount of hours.
I just pulled up this article, Psychology Today. Why does South Korea have the lowest fertility rate in the world?
Okay.
It says the vast majority of young couples in South Korea end up having one child because of high childcare costs. Young couples also have delay having children because of expensive housing. To increase fertility rates, South Korean government should implement long-term plans to reduce childcare and housing costs. Okay.
There you
so
go.
So that's the reason why.
Make it more affordable to have a family.
There's no way it's because you don't have time. There's no way you don't have time. I mean, how many, go to the Fortune 500 company CEOs. How do they have all these kids?
Well, they got money. Housing and
but they're working.
It's not a concern.
It's yeah, exactly. So it's got nothing to do with the number of hours you work. Why do soldiers have so many kids?
You know, it has to do with money is what you're saying.
It has to do with other than, it's not just about you don't have time. It doesn't take 22 hours to have sex. I mean, if you do, I mean, it's respect.
You're the goat.
Good job, Will.
Can you imagine like the, no, that he definitely wasn't a 22-hour guy.
No,
who hit his 20,000 numbers. He was more like a two-minute guy.
Yeah, hit it and quit it.
Well,
he's out.
He 10, had 000. To like, 20,000 is a tough number to get
McDonald's
to.
McDonald's drive-thru, man. He had to get
interesting here. Here, I like where you went with this, Pat, by the way. I'm focusing more on the work component. You're more focused on the fertility.
Work.
It comes down to money. FTM, follow the money. That's what it comes down to, huh?
It comes down to money and culturally what you're saying, okay? Religion.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Culture, like, I don't know the philosophies of what they're teaching from the top. Whatever the influence at the top is saying they're gonna do, okay, whatever. You know how we looked at the Muslim denomination, how many kids they're having versus Christians?
Yeah, they're kicking Christians out.
It's not even close. It comes from the top. Whatever they're saying at the top, they're doing. Mormons, what are Mormons known for? What's the joke about Mormons?
They got 20 wives.
Yeah, and not the wives part, but that's the first place you go to.
Oh yeah, I don't know. Where were you going?
It's
with
like
that?
A fantasy for you. No, when somebody has six kids, what do they say? You must be a Mormon.
Oh, you got you.
Right? Yeah. Because they, from the top, they're having a lot of kids. This has got nothing to do, my opinion. I don't think the primary factor is. I think it's other things, not the number of hours they're working per week. But it's a good way to spin it. If people want to spin it, let's go to the next story. Iran and Saudi Arabia signal the start of new era with China front and center. This title just doesn't sound good, period, for America. Saudi Arabia and Iran have agreed to reestablish diplomatic relations, marking a major shift in their decade-long rivalry that has defined the Middle East region. The two countries had been in talks for nearly 2 years. And their diplomatic breakthrough was unexpected, yet not surprising. China played a key role in the negotiations, highlighting its growing influence in the oil-rich region, which may have repercussions for U.S. influence in the region. The announcement could herald the end of a long-standing era of conflict in the Middle East. The detente goes far beyond the resumption of diplomatic relations, and Saudi-Iranian officials will work to revive old security cooperations and technology and trade agreements. Tom, thoughts on this one here? This is a CNN story, by the way.
There is one thing that China needs more than anything else long term, and that is energy. We all know that's the one thing that they don't have natural resources to support. And so they need energy deals, and they've been out cutting energy deals. That's point one. Point two is China always plays the long, long game, not just the long game, the long, long game. And they're looking at strategic. They have been looking at, you know, the whole Silk Road Initiative and a path to the Middle East, you know, originally through Afghanistan. And this is them making friendships in a region, getting their hands on long-term energy contracts and extending their influence on a world stage with people who, you know, in one way, you know, Iran is a bit of an orphan who needs some friends. Saudi Arabia isn't really. They're more of opportunists. But this is China playing a long game and getting energy in their pocket.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I did not see this coming whatsoever. I mean, if you know anything about the Arab world, it essentially breaks down to Sunni and Shiite, right? And Iran is the number one Shiite country in the world, I want to say. And Saudi Arabia is the Mecca, literally, of Sunni Muslims. And I thought, I was under the impression that they were mortal enemies. That was my assumption. And to see that China is at the center of diplomatic relations between Sunni and Shiite Muslims is wild to me. And I'm wondering, where's the U.S. in this? What role is Israel playing in this? We've seen that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu not so subtly referenced the fact that he's been working with Saudi Arabia and other Arab countries, and he's kind of said he's making peace with the 99% of the Muslim world before he gets to the 1%, which is the Palestinian situation in Gaza and the West Bank. And I'm wondering what this type of relationship with Saudi Arabia and Iran even looks like. What type of diplomatic relations will come from this? What China's actual role will be? And again, where's the United States in this situation? Because, I mean, you grew up in Iran. You know, the government is constantly saying death to United States, death to United States. But the people tell a different story there. And Saudi Arabia is, quote unquote, wink, wink, our ally. And, I mean, I think we provide them with a vast majority of their weaponry. And I don't know. Is this a good thing for the world that Saudi Arabia and Iran are resuming diplomatic relations?
A good thing? Rob, go on Google. If the average person wanted to search the following, Iran's number one enemy, like if you want to find out Iran's worst enemies in the Middle East, how would you search it? What would you type?
Iran's enemies, yeah.
Okay, worst enemies. Okay, go on that. Let's see what comes up. That's okay.
Israel, Saudi Arabia?
If you go...
Right there. Which countries are the enemies of Iran?
Yeah, if you go, you'll see Saudi Arabia is like on at the top of the list.
It's in the middle of the picture.
Yeah. Correct. It's at the top of the list, right? Yeah. So here's the point.
These guys.
Until now, okay? Until now, with the help of China. So if during your reign, your enemies unify together, you officially became the worst enemy America's ever had. So let me unpack that right there. if a leader, you know, when years ago we had just started our insurance company, and competitors of ours eventually word got out, which was awesome, because they would call me and tell me this, and they would say the following: a guy wanted to leave one of our competitors, and in that company they would say, we will leave you alone and not sue you if you go to any company except for one company, and you cannot go to PHP with Pat. You can go anywhere, but you can't go there. Okay. So those people would call me and they would say, can I have a call with you? Can I ask you why they're saying this? They said to me, I can go anywhere, but I cannot join you. Why is that? I said, why do you think? I don't need to tell you. Why do you think? Well, I don't know. It's now everybody is asking, why do they want us to go anywhere? They won't do anything to us, but if we go to you, we're going to sue you. Mm-hmm. Okay. So guess what? What do you say to that? Is that a good strategy? Is that a bad strategy? You got to give credit. They're better off not me, you know, them unifying with me as an enemy, okay? Because your opponent is getting what? Stronger and stronger and stronger. They were taking the right position. Credit to them as a competitor. But think about it, if all of a sudden all your enemies that are leaving you under your reign, they all choose to unite. They hated each other a year ago. They hated each other 5 years ago. Now they're best friends?
Yeah.
How does that happen? In life, there's cause and effect. What caused it? This is the effect. What's the cause? Is it the cause of the way a president handled Ukraine and Russia conflict? Mm-hmm. Is it the cause of how Biden handled his foreign affairs? Is that the cause? When is the last time you've heard China, Russia, Iran, and Saudi Arabia now being best friends?
Yeah, certainly not Saudi. The rest of them, yes.
You add that to the list. What kind of power now do they have?
Yeah.
The amount of power they have now is multidimensional. They got oil squared away. They got manufacturing squared away. They got nuclear bombs squared away. They got a lot of things squared away. They definitely got land squared away. And so now it's going to be what? It's not going to be EU and US, and then you have China, Russia, Iran, Saudi, and then they're going into Africa, China is, because they're going out there and buying all those, you know, the land to help them with their, you know, batteries and lithium and all cobalt and all the stuff that they're doing.
What is it, the Silk Road Initiative?
They're being so strategic themselves, okay? You got to give them credit. Strategically, China's out-strategizing U.S. today and U.S. keep sending more and more money to Zelensky, and Zelensky has so much control now over the U.S. where he has the audacity to say, if the war gets worse, American parents will be losing their sons in war because they're going to have to send their sons. I'm prefacing what he said. Mm-hmm. He's saying that American kids are going to have to go to war.
Hell no.
Who the hell are you to make a comment like that?
Hell no.
But here's the part. What did the U.S. president say? Nothing. If Zelensky makes a comment like that and the U.S. government doesn't say anything about it, have you seen this video or no when he says this? Yeah, you can, U.S. will have to send troops to fight in Ukraine. Who the hell are you to say U.S. will have to send troops to fight the war in Ukraine? Like, I'm sorry, are you officially the president of the United States? Or are you the president of Ukraine? You're not responsible for our kids and what they're going to be doing. But the fear tactic works on what he's doing. So this is all, that's the one I think right there. Zoom in a little bit to see if this is the one. Does he say it in English or is it translated? Play it. See if what...
The U.S. will have to send their sons and daughters exactly the same way as we are sending their sons and daughters to war. And they will have to fight because
who
it's
are you?
NATO that we're talking about.
I'm sorry.
And they will be dying, God forbid, because it's a horrible thing.
Do you realize what this, like, you're speaking on behalf of our kids? Who the hell are you to even have the audacity to talk like that? Do you understand what I'm, do you understand, like, the rage to have a guy, we're sending you money, you're talking like you are, like our president reports to you?
Mm-hmm.
The other day, ESPN came out and apologized yesterday for comments made by Kendrick Perkins. And the girl from First Take, what's her name, Molly? Molly comes out and Molly says, there were certain comments made here about the fact that 80% of NBA voters who vote for MVP are white. Those stats are not true, and not only not true, they're drastically wrong. And we just wanted to correct that. Her words. Okay. To check who? ESPN has to sit down. Kendrick, you can't say stuff like that.
Yeah.
You were wrong, right? You were wrong. If somebody like that says it under your administration, you and I are talking, and this guy says something like this, guess what you have to say the next day?
Mm-hmm.
You have to say, we understand the pressure President Zelensky is under, but with all due respect, President Zelensky, we decide when we send our sons and daughters to war, not you. Yeah. We, that is our responsibility. I understand you're losing a lot of loved ones and a lot of kids. You don't get to make a comment like that. That guy's going to get a phone call from me 5 minutes after he makes a comment like that.
Well, I totally agree.
That's if you're the president. I agree with you, and I'm very incensed by the comment. But what I was asking myself when I heard it was, why does that guy think it's okay to say that? Who is giving him the impression in any way at any time that it's okay to say that? Is he just outside of his mind? Does he just have big cojones? Why would he think it's okay to say that? Who's given him that impression that it's okay to say that? Because if you're the leader, he doesn't even say that, I don't think.
But also, by the way, if you saw the end of the clip, he said, because NATO would have to step in. And one would say, all right, there is an agreement within NATO.
We're NATO.
But they're not part of NATO even.
That's correct.
Ukraine is not part of NATO.
It's one of the seven excuses that started this thing.
Exactly. So that's the whole justification for this invasion. So if a NATO country says something like that, what is that called? Like Amendment 2 or whatever the number it is within the NATO clause, would you attack one country?
Yeah.
We all must defend ourselves, whatever number it is.
Right.
If a NATO country says that, okay, that's part of the agreement. But you're not part of NATO.
Correct.
So there's sort of an entitlement situation that I think is happening with.
It's one of us is all of us.
Right. What is that? What is that NATO provision right there, Rob? I don't know if you want to go with that real quick. But back to the China, Saudi, Iran situation. You know how they say what the enemy of the enemy is my friend? There just seems to be that situation going on here.
All of that happened. Yeah. Under his reign. All of that happened under Biden.
Article 5 of NATO. That's what.
All of that happened under Biden. Unifying the enemies, you get to take that with your legacy with you. You strengthened our enemies and brought them together. Congratulations. Congratulations.
My biggest concern is Saudi.
Under his watch, watch what's happened under his watch. You unified the enemies. We lost our weapons in Afghanistan, okay? A bank or two went out, went under, okay? This is all under your watch is what's going on. This is all under your watch. And if you go to prior administrations, no banks under Trump. These issues weren't happening in China, Iran, any of that stuff. And you were not having those issues with Afghanistan. And that comes down to management. It comes down to leadership. I know nobody wants to hear this, but you have to be able to set it aside and realize these are not good things. Those guys, those four getting together doesn't help America. And if you're watching this right now yourself and you're saying, wow, can't believe you're saying this. You're like a spokesperson for, you know, such and such. And this is what you are. I can't believe you're saying this, Pat. No, no. Think about your kids. Don't think about your arguments that you've had to defend because of your mom, dad, or professor, or teacher, or whoever. Actually think about it. What happens if you're a gang in the streets and four other of the biggest gangs who hated each other and killed each other, they joined forces? What happened to your community? Did you get safer? Is it safer for your kids? If you can still sit there and say, I'm going to be okay, no problem. But if you sit there and say, this is not good, yeah, then next time around, think before sitting there and saying, I just don't want to get that guy out there because I don't like the way DeSantis or Trump or this guy, the way they talk. They don't seem like they're gentle leaders. Yeah, you definitely don't want your leaders to be gentle towards the enemy.
Yeah, I look at it this way. There are players in every major sport that would rather work for a soft coach and cash the check, that don't have a burning desire to go win championships. They'd like to win a championship, but they'd really rather have the easy check, the soft coach, and a good city. And then you have people that want to work for an easy boss, a soft boss, and work from home and have it easy. Well, let me tell you, when it comes to your country and it comes to world stage, you don't have that option. That is not an option that's available. And I will forever remember Trump's handshake with Putin. I remember the one I'm talking about, Pat, where he pulls him in tight. It's like, what are you doing, dude? You know? And I will remember how he made the Chinese nervous on trade. I remember how he sat there and told the German representatives in NATO, you got to pay your fair share. And let me tell you, you may not like it, and it may not be the guy you want to work for or a coach you want to play for, but that's not the way this works when it's your country. And that's not the world stage that we live on now. And that's not the reality of life we have. You have to have solid leadership. And under Biden's watch, these things have happened and they're not good. Here yeah. It is. I love this. You see a little tug there, Pat? Yeah. You know what that means.
That's his move. Pompeo Kushner.
There are messages in there.
No, of course there's a message in there. I'm just saying, for me, in every situation like this, you have to draw the line and not let people do certain things, and that's unfortunately happening. Let me go to what Goldman Sachs just said yesterday, Tom. Goldman Sachs says no longer expects the Fed to hike rates in March. Citi stress on banking system. This is a CNBC story that just came out. This comes out after regulations announces measures to prevent the spread of contagion following the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank and the closure of Signature Bank, citing systemic risk. In light of the stress in the banking system, we no longer expect the FOMC to deliver a rate hike as its next meeting on March 22nd, said Goldman economist John Hatzius on a Sunday note. Goldman has previously anticipated a 25 basis point hike last month. The rate Federal Open Market Committee increased the federal funds rate by a quarter of a percentage point to a target range of 4.5 to 4.75, its highest since 2007. The bank still expects to see 25 basis point hike in May, June, and July, with a terminal rate expecting to be at 5.25 to 5.5. What do you think, Tom? Is he going to increase it, or is he going to stay flat and not do anything for a minute?
First of all, I got to remember who's talking here. Goldman Sachs is talking. It hasn't had the best of quarters, has been laying off people, and there's even been some very carefully written articles talking about David Solomon. But Goldman said this on Sunday. Goldman is lobbying to go back lower because it helps the banking industry. It helps him get cheaper money. That's what they're begging for. And by the way, Goldman is the same guys that worked with Silicon Valley Bank, you know, from 2 weeks ago and couldn't get the deals done and couldn't get all that put together. So this is Goldman, I think, just kind of out there, you know, knurfing for moisture, just trying to, you know, grab a little bit and lobby. The other banks that are out there saying, hey, given a little uncertainty, we think 50 basis points off the table, probably just be 25. I think that's what we're going to see. But this was Goldman on Sunday lobbying and hoping, in my opinion. And they're in a weak position. They haven't had a good couple quarters, as you've seen.
I guess my question is, you know, you got Goldman saying some things. You got Barclays saying some things. You got the bond king, Jeffrey Gundlach, saying some things. Everyone's going to give their opinion on this. Is Jerome Powell going to be swayed by anybody? Jerome Powell's on a mission right now to bring down inflation. He's fighting that with the interest rates. Obviously, unemployment's also a factor. Jerome Powell, he's been battle-tested. He's been through multiple administrations at this point. Is he going to continue the course with these rate increases? Is he going to stand pat, as the bond king Jeffrey Gundlach kind of pointed out? That remains to be seen. Like, is a bank failure or multiple bank failures like this enough to diverge his expedition of increasing rates? He's done a pretty good job of saying sort of agnostic to what the presidents have to say and what banks have to say. You saw that his interaction with, what was that, Senator Kennedy, the other day.
From Louisiana.
Yeah, Louisiana, when he gave him a little breakdown right there of all the interest rate situation.
I'm not picking on you. I just want an answer.
Yeah. I'm cotton picking answer. So
Listen, Gundlach, the bond king, said the following. He says, to save the central bank's credibility, they will probably raise rates 25 basis points. I would think that would be the last increase. He, Gundlach, does not think that the Federal Reserve is going to slow down because of this. There's a lot of different perspectives here. There's Goldman saying one thing. There's Gundlach saying one thing. There's Bloomberg saying one thing. Bloomberg says Federal Reserve Jerome Powell plans to raise interest rates at a faster pace to curb inflation, has been disrupted by the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank and Signature, which has caused financial instability, meaning they're saying that he may not. Now, is this indirect way of Bloomberg and Goldman trying to talk to Powell to get him to say don't do it by putting fear in there? Who knows? Yesterday, Megyn Kelly hosted a debate. I don't know if you saw this or not. Vivek Ramaswamy was on there with David Sachs. It was a very good, it was a 90-minute debate.
Vivek's everywhere right now.
It was a very, very good debate, and Vivek didn't back down about his argument, and they actually went at it. It was a very good position. Both of them presented a very good argument. Vivek said, you went out there and you put so much fear that they finally said, fine, here's what we're going to be doing. We're going to do a backstop and bail out the customers. And he's saying that is still the wrong move. And David is saying, you're being irresponsible to think what you're thinking. I'm thinking about more the people. And then Vivek said, these are people that, you know, they're not the small-time business owners. They're the bigger ones. It's not just the small and middle-income guys that are being hit. The point is, we don't really know what Powell's going to be doing. I don't know if Powell's the type of guy that is super predictable, where he's going to, I think he is a sensible guy that he can be convinced, but he also has a backbone, meaning, which is exactly place to be. I put him a high score for being able to reason in this specific context. I see him hearing out from everybody that calls him and saying, hey, they probably have a list. You know, they probably have a list of banks that are next. Can you pull up the list of banks that are next? You just put like the next Silicon Valley banks. Who's on the list of the next Silicon Valley bank? Whatever. If you search it, it'll come up. They have a list of banks that they're looking at. And they know where they're at because many of these guys have to report their names. And the more these lists become public lists, okay? Meaning, if there's new names that pop up, think about what you're thinking if you have your money in that bank. You do not want to be on any list right now by any credible source.
Yeah, first
you understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so
isn't the list to be on?
No. So imagine the call being made to Jerome to say, hey, Jerome, here's what you need to know. If you increase the rates, you will officially be the first Federal Reserve chair to have 7 banks go under. Do you want that part of your legacy? Let me say this one more time, Jerome Powell. if you raise rates quickly like you've been doing, there's another seven banks that are like Silicon Valley Bank that are going to get hit. And they're in the top 38 and they're $100 billion banks. Do you want that part of your legacy? And Jerome has to really think about that. He really has to think about that, especially when you look at FDIC, and FDIC's got how much money? $125 billion. Can you look at how much FDIC has right now? If you go look at how much FDIC is right now, I saw a number the other day, $35 billion as of yesterday or something like that. How much does, what do they have? Okay, this as of 2022. But do they have the number as of 2023? Okay. So they have $128 billion, give or take, to cover 1.26% of a total 9.9 trillion. So it's not billion, trillion, right? Yeah. So I do think Jerome has to think about his next move and how quickly he increases rates. I do think he has to think about that because he will, could potentially, the fear that the opposing side could put on him is you will be known as the chair where the most banks went under your leadership. I don't know if he wants that. And I don't even know if that even does anything to his decision-making process.
Well, we talked about yesterday. We had a guest on yesterday who talked about that he thought with the new depositor protective in place, that protects against the bank run because everybody can calm down there and say, you don't have to run to the bank. If something ever happened to your bank, you know, there's going to be a backstop from the federal government and this $25 billion fund that's been set up. And I said I thought there was a 25% chance of it happening. And specifically, I meant, you know, First Republic because they're, and I characterized them yesterday as I do now, as they're kind of hopping on one leg. And that's where it's going to go. So I'm unchanged from yesterday, even though I read a ton of stuff early this morning, PBD. If there's ongoing jitters, which really seem to be calming pretty quick in banking, I think he backs off the 50 because he doesn't want to jitter the system, but he's going to keep going after inflation. And I don't think it has to do, it's really interesting, the central bank's credibility. What do you mean credibility? This is not a thing where you say, I did what I said I was going to do. No, things happen. The economy moves around. We just saw over the weekend, a lot of things happen, sometimes pretty damn quick. And so I think he looks at it and says, is everything calmed down enough? Are we going to spook the system? No? Okay, well, then I'm continuing with 0.25 because we got to continue this march against inflation. And I think he's got a backbone. I thought he looked pretty impressive. We were making fun of Kennedy, and I'm sorry that anybody was offended by me using that voice. But I thought Jerome Powell handled himself pretty well and pretty stable.
Yeah, I think so as well.
At that hearing.
Tom, by the way, Rob just did a quick poll. 97% of the audience was offended by the way you made fun of Kennedy.
Tom,
so I just want to make sure you are aware of that. Please,
Tom,
work on your condescending approach towards the Kennedy. You know,
I'll go down to New Orleans. I'll buy everybody a nice redfish. You know.
Let me read a super chat here by Paul, which is kind of interesting. So shout out to Paul. Powell will continue to raise rates, stress testing the vulnerable ones, then bail them out. I mean backstops. Shore up the bank, making them even more powerful as Americans get crushed and lose. Okay, Paul.
Powerful or powerful?
Well,
there's a play on words.
Yeah,
right there.
I like that. Powerful, but you know he's saying powerful. By the way, there's a part of what he's saying that he's got a very good point because think about it this way: if you know the establishment, and if you know if these guys truly want to eliminate smaller banks and to make this thing even more nationalized.
This is where you do it.
Centralized banking. If that is truly the agenda, hey, Jerome Powell, if you really want to do that, don't raise it by quarter. Don't do half. Go 0.75 basis point. If this guy goes half or higher, he goes half or higher, then there's a community of people that will say, I think they kind of do want to get rid of the smaller banks and bring them together. I don't know, Paul, if I'm there where you are right now, but if it does happen, there's an argument for that for sure because it is strengthening the top four or five banks that they would sit there and say big thank you. I'm sure if Powell raised the rates anything half or higher, he may get a nice bottle of wine and some nice cigars from the top five banks in America saying, hey, you're amazing.
Well, I just got a text from Jamie Dimon. We're up for 3/4 of a point. My boys are ready. Hell.
Oh, my God.
I just got a text from Senator Kennedy in Louisiana. He's got his eye on you there, BizDoc.
Oh, no.
Not happy with your impersonation.
Tell him we'll go out for, I'll buy him a nice redfish dinner down there. It's delicious.
And, oh, that's appropriating. Cajun culture.
No, so if you're down there in Louisiana, you can get it fresh and it's delicious. It's fantastic.
Let's talk about building a community.
Red beans and rice.
Let's talk about building a community, which is what Elon Musk is doing. Elon Musk bought us out to make a tiny village for his workers. Elon Musk has spent millions purchasing land in a small Texas neighborhood in Bastrop, outside of Austin city limits, to build his own little village near Tesla, SpaceX, and Boring Companies. Musk's vision is to create his own utopia where his employees can live and work. Some of the locals have already sold their land to Musk, but while they were initially told it would be used for workers' housing, they learned later that Musk planned to build a town. However, Musk called the Wall Street Journal report that he is building a town false on Friday. The idea of living in an unregulated private town or city has risen in popularity in recent years. And Praxis is one of the newer projects funded partially by Peter Thiel. The goal is to build a city outside of the United States and free of government control. There's interest for that.
I have a question for you.
Go ahead.
Anytime you use that sarcastic, slow voice, you have a strong opinion on something like that. So tell me, Patrick, why did you read it in that tone? What are you feeling like this?
You know, I just like that he's toying with people. I love it. I love the fact that he's toying with people and messing with people and just getting them to constantly talk about what he's up to. But by the way, if he's doing this, what's wrong with it? Say he is doing this and say you work for Tesla and say you ask for it. You know, we have some guys here that, you know, we were about to make that offer on that 11-acre land that we were looking at. You know what a lot of people ask for? Can we build some boxable homes there?
Yeah.
Can we get 5 or 10 boxable homes where we can rent? The idea of wanting to build a community is not far-fetched or anything. There's a lot of other people that wish they had the kind of a culture where the people would want to build a community.
Yeah.
That's called you're making great culture. It's not by force. It's by choice. You don't have to live there. It's purely a choice and a benefit and an add-on. So whether he's doing this or whether he's not doing this, there's no difference between what he is doing or what Disney World did in Orlando when Walt Disney was using other people's names to buy up land because they didn't want to sell it to him directly. And then all of a sudden they're like, holy shit, this guy bought up all the land and he built his own zip code or two or three called Disney World. Elon's just building his own Disney World. Shout out to him.
By the way, I'm all about the company culture. And when you were going to maybe make that $13 million offer on that $40 million condo in downtown Miami at the Thousand Biscayne Museum, the Hadid building, I was willing to sacrifice my lifestyle to live in that ridiculous penthouse unit
in
Miami.
Patriotic. I'm very noble and patriotic from your end.
So if that's what you want to build, if you want to build that community, that small village in downtown Miami, and you need a team leader,
like you.
Just sign me up, Pat.
You're like a great war buddy willing to go above and beyond and sacrifice yourself.
I was just going to say, it comes down to sacrifice, Pat. And I'm willing to sacrifice what I'm doing right now.
It's an emotional moment.
To live in the penthouse.
I'm
going to
try to hold it together.
I'm going to try
to hold it together right now.
So
I think it comes down to chapstick, and you are kissing some major butt at the moment.
Nah, he by the way, he knows how much I love heights. And the balcony, like what I would do is every night we'd have dinner in the balcony. That's what we would be doing every night. So let's go to this Colin Kaepernick story here. Colin Kaepernick accuses white adoptive parents of problematic upbringing, perpetuating racism. This is not a joke, by the way. This is actually what he said. Okay. So... Colin Kaepernick, former NFL star and activist, used his white adoptive parents of perpetuating racism in a new interview in his upcoming graphic novel, Change the Game. Kaepernick spoke about growing up in a problematic household and how his parents tried to steer him in a direction they thought was best, which led to several fights between them and their adopted son. One of those disagreements illustrated in the novel was a fight over his hairstyle. Kaepernick wanted to wear cornrows, but his mother pushed back, saying, oh, your hair's not professional. Oh, you look like a little thug. The lack of racial harmony in his home own home encouraged Kaepernick to find community elsewhere, and he chose to pursue a football career instead of a professional baseball career because there were significantly more blacks in the NFL and MLB. Kaepernick still hopes to return to the NFL and has worked as an activist and advocate for social justice issues. Mm-hmm. I have like so many different issues with this article here, but I'll go to you first, man. Go ahead.
So if you're Colin Kaepernick, you're adopted by... were his parents white? What were they?
Yeah, if you can pull up
okay.
the Colin Kaepernick's parents. So
if someone adopts you, I assume they take you out of a foster care or of a situation that you probably don't want to be in. So this family adopts Colin Kaepernick, and now he resents the fact that they adopted him because they're saying, hey, if you do certain things, people are going to judge you. You know what's crazy? I actually had a conversation yesterday randomly with... our friend Jerry, who works upstairs in the sales department, black guy, right? And he's sitting there with April, another black woman. Great, great duo. If they're watching, shout out to them. And he literally just put cornrows in his hair. Did you see it? I go, oh, hey, nice new hairdo. He goes, yeah, man, I've been wanting to do this like for years. But my family were, I believe they're Seventh-day Adventists. And he goes, this is very much frowned upon. I said, oh, okay, tell me why. He goes, yeah, you know, cornrows, tattoos, this is something you just can't do. And he's a black guy. I go, oh, all right, explain to me. He's like, it's just frowned upon. He's explaining to me why. I go, all right, cool, got it. So this isn't a race thing. This is a culture thing, right? And so, for instance, it'd be the equivalent of a white guy just growing his long hair out and listening to heavy metal. And his parents saying, hey, if you actually want to be taken seriously, you probably can't just, you know, look like Axl Rose out there or Slash just with hair flowing if you want to actually be taken seriously like that. So wouldn't you agree that your parents probably, your adoptive parents, want the best for you? It would just seem that Colin Kaepernick has sort of lost common sense.
Tom.
I would feel different than I do right now if over the course of the last 10 years, you've been hearing him say, I only played football because I thought there was more racial diversity in the sport. I didn't hear that. And no, we heard a lot about Colin. Kim and I saw him in the airport by himself, not very famous. And he was very chill. And I don't remember comments made like that, and he can say he's repressed and all that, but to suddenly come out, and also didn't remember him saying, I've lived in a repressed household. I just feel like, you know, each step he has to appropriate some other offense to continue to, you know, press his relevance. And he is relevance. He brought attention to some things, some in the right way, some in the wrong way, and some were positive, some not. I'm just kind of shocked now that now it's time to, you know, you go attack a bunch of other things. And I haven't heard that his parents were these tough people. They adopted him. You know, adoption is an act of charity. You know, they owe him respect as he grows up, just as he owes them respect. It's called family.
Let me tell you, man, I have so many problems with this. First of all, his biological mother, Heidi, I believe Russo, gave him up at 5 weeks. Okay. Until today, the biological father, they don't know who it is. It's unknown. Okay. So if it's unknown, I mean, I don't want to get graphic, but you understand what that means.
Yep.
The only way somebody's unknown is because, you know, you had a lot of different partners.
Yeah, she was very friendly, let's just say
that. Yeah. So let's put the perspective. Then there's the adopted parent, the parents that adopted you. So there's four people in this situation here for you to recognize and not recognize. Till 2021, he didn't want to meet his mother, his biological mother, for giving up for adoption. You have your father, who you don't know who he is. You have your biological mother, who you don't want to meet. Then you have the parents that adopted you. And you think you made it into the NFL? Let me get this straight. You think you made it to the NFL all on your own? Seriously? You think you did that? I'm sorry. The role that parents play to buy the uniforms, to take you to practice, to be part of leagues and drive you an hour or fly you out and bring coaches. And do you know how many thousands of hours his parents or mother sacrificed? And this is what you say just to sell a story in a documentary? It's a slap in the face to parents? Mm-hmm. Do you know what this does to people that are considering to adopt? This is the fear of parents that are afraid to adopt. You mean you want parents to put 15, 20 years of their lives into adopting a kid and 20 years later to get something like this? Because now you have money and you don't need them anymore? It's the ultimate insult. It's disgusting if you ask me. There's no parent that is perfect, but anybody that chooses to adopt you, give you a home, take care of you, and now you have this kind of a life because of what they did to sacrifice thousands of hours. Mm-hmm. There's nobody in the world. There's two people in the list of your life that you should never be able to criticize, and it's the two parents that adopted you. Mm-hmm. Those two people you need to lift up and turn them into heroes forever. You cannot say anything about those two, mm-hmm. specifically in an embarrassing way like this.
Adoption is a choice.
Anyways.
And those parents did not care what color you were.
Yeah.
And they adopted you.
Respect to his parents for what they did. And it is what it is. Man, I remember watching the Super Bowl with this guy in the game. I couldn't believe the stuff he was doing. I really enjoyed watching the Super Bowl in San Francisco.
Oh, the power outage game.
It's a great game. Yep. Yeah. Anyway, okay. We're at the end of the podcast. We're a minute over. Yeah. We got some stuff to do. I do want to say a couple things here, guys. We're getting a lot of requests from different people, when entrepreneurs that we're having conversations with about anxiety, about mental and emotional challenges, some people that are going through right now with businesses. So I am hosting a webinar specifically for that topic on March 28th at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We're going to talk about hardship currently going on, dealing with pressures and how to thrive during turbulent times. This is if you're trying to figure out a way on how to be mentally and emotionally tougher in a strange time like this. This is the webinar for you, specifically for those who are in competitive environments. You're running a business, you're an entrepreneur, you're a thriving person that's moving up, and you got a lot of different pressures. You're a parent, you're a father, you're a mother, you're trying to do a lot at the same time and get the finances in order. This webinar is for you. The link will be in the description below. Again, March 28th, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Go and register for it and put it in your calendar so we can spend an hour together on March 28th. 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Rob, do you have the link or have they sent a link to you?
Not yet, but I'll get it and put it in.
Let's get the link. Let's put it in the chat. Mario Kai, if you're listening to this, send it to Rob so Rob has it to put in the description. Gang, have a great day. We will do this again, I think, Thursday with a guest. So we will see you Thursday with a guest mm-hmm. this week. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.